We have several groups out there who follow the program and discuss it among themselves live as it's unfolding in social media, including Twitter. One of the Twitter groups is a guy named Marty and his crew who always listen to the show and wait until how late in the show I use a bumper song from the Beatles. So it took an hour and 5 minutes in this show, Marty. And so that is one mystery we have solved. If you're just dialing in now and tuning in now and wondering where our first guest is, Donald Hoffman, we've had some sort of a miscommunication with Professor Hoffman. He was going to be here to talk about the case against reality, but we can't find him. So our second guest, Paul Stonehill, graciously agreed to come on early. We have a lot of material to cover. Coming up in this next segment, we're going to talk to him about wild men and giants of Russia. It's just like the Bigfoot and Yeti legends. Russia has their own versions, in fact, more than one. Going to find out what evidence there exists for that and what these creatures might be. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM after this. Paul Stonehill, can you talk a little bit before we go into the wild men and giants about the sources of information, how difficult it is to get reliable information out of Russia today? You know, we get media reports about crackdowns on social liberties and how, you know, dissidents in particular can be targeted. People who leak information are targeted. People who say something harsh about Putin or his group, his oligarchs, even if they're in foreign countries, they can get tracked down and harmed. Is there any risk for you? And can you describe how difficult it is to get reliable information out?
Well, the most secretive governmental information will not be published. However, enough is being leaked out or available, at least to make us wonder about what's going on and what direction we can see. And a lot of the actions the government is doing cannot conceal the situation. For example, the fortification of the Arctic region. It's on a very large scale. It's taking place, and it's understood that it's not only against the adversaries like Canada or the United States or NATO. There is something else out there. Putin is not stupid. His government, they're not stupid. They understand the situation. They have all the files from the former Soviet UFO and USO research, and they understand the extent of the difficulties. I'm not going to go into politics. I'm from Ukraine, so I could add a few more things, but let's leave it like that. Let's just say that I get information, and if anything I was getting from Russia or the Soviet Union would be dangerous to them, they wouldn't let me know, but I would have felt the impact. So at this point, you know, whatever I bring out, it's very interesting, and I want to show to the West and the Orient the extent of Russia's and Central Asian and Ukrainian paranormal phenomena, because, like you said, very few people know about it, but they should.
You know, my own travels back in the 90s to Russia, I remember in preparing for those trips to deal with the UFO topic, there are skeptics who would debunk anything. They tried to debunk anything that might come out of Russia before it even came out, saying, you can't trust anything that comes from the Russians. The Russian people are gullible. They've been lied to and have been subjected to so much state-controlled propaganda over the years. They have no idea what's real and what isn't. And I felt that it was an insult to Russians in particular that, look, they've certainly been bombarded with propaganda over the years, but they're like Americans. You can tell the difference between what's a spin job and what isn't.
Yeah, so, you know, those debunkers, they earn their bread. They're very professional in what they do. I'm sure they know that some of the publications from the West that were allowed to be published in the Soviet Union about UFOs were books by somebody like Donald Menzel and others, because the Soviets worked hand in hand with those here who don't want information about alien presence or UFOs and so forth being available. And, yeah, they attacked me personally when I came out with such information. I couldn't understand what's going on. I came from a totalitarian country, and here in the United States, I'm being told, or people are being told, not to listen to me. And what your audience needs to know is, under the Soviet times, yeah, a subject like UFO was a taboo. But because of that, because the Soviets were not privy to tabloids. Whatever information they collected was virgin information, pure. And that's how we found out quite a lot of things. Yeah, most of the incidents that they saw or sightings had to do with military training or testing by the Soviets. And that's what got the government concerned. But not 5 or 10%. Nobody could not even the Soviet Academy of Sciences could explain 5% of sightings. And of course, the Soviets got worried to the extent that they created their own excellent research programs, secretive programs. But now I know, after so many years, that there are forces here in the West who work hand in hand with the Soviet Union before and with Russia today and others, not to allow such information to be available to people who want to know in the civilian realm.
So there's one thing that the Russians and Americans can agree on, and that was withholding certain sensitive information on those kinds of topics.
Hello?
I guess that means that there are some things that the Russian government, the current government, and our government do agree on, that is withholding certain sensitive information on those kinds of topics. Would you agree?
I will go into further. After years of research, I am completely convinced they work together in many areas of research. All this infighting, whatever, I don't even pay attention to it anymore. It took place in the false Cold War and so forth. We didn't know Soviet citizens. We, people suffered. People, yearned for freedom and so forth. But all this Cold War, this was full falsehood. Now I can see, because they all work together on more sensitive subjects. They work together today. You look at areas like Mariana Trench or the Antarctic, and the Soviets and the Americans were there together in 1940s in Antarctica, for example. We'll speak about it later, but just okay. So that you know. And I think the exchange of information started taking place right after defeat of Nazi Germany in 1945. Both sides got enough on their hands from Nazi Germany to implement space programs here and there and other programs. And beyond that, they found something that forced them to join hands. From Russian sources and information that leaked out, we know that it happened about 1953 officially, when more countries were pulled in, like France and the United Kingdom, and shared information about a threat to or presence of some other civilization or force that is not human on this planet. And I'm just speaking in generalizations, but that's what's going on. And they still work together. They work together in the Arctic. They join hands when it comes to Mariana Trench and a few other areas on this planet. So I'm well beyond even thinking that there is any competition between the two countries.
Well, we're definitely going to come back to that, but I promised in this segment to talk about wild men and giants. Let's start with the wild men. So the equivalent of Bigfoot, Yeti, what are the names of, and is there's more than one type in the Russian northern forests and tundra?
Yes, Russian northern territories. Look, your audience can look at the map and basically understand. From Siberia to the northward, to the Arctic areas, and eastward into Yakutia, Chukotka, very interesting land, very close away from Alaska. You can throw something from Alaska and hit it, like someone said. But anyway, that's where you can find beings that are called Tungu, Chuchuna, and a number of other names, very unusual. Relic humanoids, like Boris Porchnev said, he was a Soviet scientist who was very much into this research, even when it wasn't fashionable to do so. And you can find legends that go back for thousands of years, I dare say. There was more of such unusual creatures, and I'll give some descriptions in a while, but there were more such unusual creatures in the area, but with the expansion of the Soviet power and conquest of the Arctic, for example, they were pushed into the forest. And, impenetrable forests even today, like in Siberia and towards the Taimyr Peninsula and other. So what you see is humanoid beings that act very strangely, and the descriptions are unusual. From an old Siberian case still open from 1845, criminal case, there were a creature that, for example, was killed in the forest by locals, and they described it in very unusual matter. It had fur. It was of dark color. Feet were pointed. By the way, it's very interesting that a lot of the northern Yeti, let's call him that, or abominable snowmen have pointed feet. They don't have fur on the nose and cheeks. Some of them had reddish colors. Some had unusual facial features. Most of them would not speak, but just emit strange sounds. Like I remember one was something like roo, roo, roo. They whistled. Some were described like very tall and thin, shaggy, probably covered by fur, ran very fast, usually did not attack humans, but, you know, like I said, they would borrow females and not return them back usually. But other than that, they kind of stayed away. They were not too hostile. Yeah, they threw away rocks once in a while. And they were said to live in the forest under a snag or a dead tree. Some other areas they kept to themselves. There was one ridge, for example, I believe in Chukotka, where people, local people, did not want to go to because they said that the Chuchuna, for example, there was the name for them in Chukotka, did not like visitors. But basically, they coexisted with the humans, and they resembled humans. They were somewhat special beings, but different from us. I'm just reading you what was collected based on conversations had by scientists, geologists, and so forth in the areas of Russian North. I have a description of a humanoid creature who was very big, had no neck, and it was all covered with hair. And it was called Mirigdi, for example. You wanted to know the names. Another one, Kitanya. That's very interesting. From 1930s, in the Lamut language, it said pop-eyed, somebody who has eyes that pop out, very large eyes, and tracks were long and pointed, again, footprints. So it's just a few descriptions and of some creatures that I found information about.
So are the hairy men different from the giants? Because I've done some reporting on giants that are alleged to have lived here in North America. Is it something separate or the same thing?
The ones that I brought up, usually more than 6 feet tall and very humanoid. If they were actually giants, this would have been reported. I'm not saying there are no reports of giants, and I presented some from the country of Georgia, for example, in conjunction with my research of the 1982 swimmers case in Central Asia, reported gigantic beings, humanoid, who actually operate in the lakes of Central Asia, Georgia. That was in the beginning of 20th century. And in the 20th century, for sure, in the Lake Baikal. And Vladimir Putin, I think, was so much impressed with the research, not only mine, that he actually went down in a special deep apparatus, deep water apparatus, to the bottom of the Lake Baikal. I think that he is very much aware of the interesting paranormal areas in the former Soviet Union and Russia. For example, I have a video about Putin meeting up with shamans in the area, which is very much connected to this golden woman presence that we talked in the last segment. So he is everywhere, and he seems to be interested in the areas that present a very keen paranormal phenomena in Russia.
So he went down into
the north.
He went down in a bathysphere, whatever you call them.
Yeah.
At Lake Baikal.
Yeah, yeah. He did, and he's a brave person because he's, you have to give it to him that he goes into, of course, some of it is fake. Like he went down, he was doing some underwater diving, and he found ancient amphoras or vases, and then we found out that they were placed there. And also with the case of Lake Vostok we're going to speak about, he was reported to have drunk a vial of water from the lake. It wasn't so, because at that time they didn't get the water. But he's interested in paranormal phenomena just based on such intangible information.
Well, can you imagine the KGB files he'd have access to if he wanted to, if he was curious enough to read them?
The files to that you saw, the KGB files, as I told listeners for a while, KGB was interested in UFOs and paranormal to the extent of the 10th directorate, 10th section of the third directorate. They were guarding special facilities. That's what they said when they released the 124 pages. I am not naive. I know they have a lot of other information. But put them aside. Real military research, counterintelligence, naval intelligence, those are the guys that have the best. And I know Putin is very much liked in the Navy. He helped build it up. He has the access to it. And that's, we can't even imagine the extent of the information in those files.
Again, I'm promising to come back to that stuff. Before we leave the Russian hairy men and giants, you had used a phrase where you said that research was not fashionable. Do you mean that it was sort of banned, or as with UFOs, scientists were for a long time discouraged? They were told, hey, this is Western propaganda, don't research that, it's all baloney, a distraction. Is that the kind of thing that happened with the wild men research as well?
Scientific bureaucracy is same all over the world, be it here or the United Kingdom or the Soviet Union. They become ossified, in most of the academic science. There are no bold researchers sometimes, and people who push the limits, they're not liked by their circles. No, the KGB did not do anything to Boris Portnoy. It's the people around him in science. They didn't want to bother to study relic humanoids, but he did. And other real scientists, geologists, others who studied the North, they spend their own time doing so. So it's not the government per se, or it's the scientific establishment bureaucracy.
So like ridicule. As that
well,
exists
like,
here.
Like somebody today who is nowadays, I've read up, who on television, who is ridiculing UFO research. Same thing. But they can, until tomorrow, because we had people like Valery Burdakov in the missile and rocket science, who brought up ideas about Phobos 2 and others. We had people like Boris Portnoy, other scientists who were bold enough to show, inconsistencies. And say, yeah, paranormal phenomena exists. We need to study it.
Well, Burdakov, that's a name I know. And he was a brave man. So we're talking with Paul Stonehill about mysteries from the former USSR and the Eastern Bloc countries. We're going to get to some Chinese mysteries as well, Arctic, Antarctic, a couple of really strange cases involving deep water lakes and what you'd call monsters, I guess, or certainly creatures. We'll be right back. We're talking with Paul Stonehill, a researcher, investigator, writer. He produces a lot of incredible pieces that he posts on a YouTube channel. I think we've got a connection to that and a link that you can find his work. If you look at the Coast to Coast website, you can check it out. Paul will return in a moment here. We're going to go into Lake Vostok. We look for aliens in the skies. We figure ETs are coming in from somewhere out there in space, out in the wild blue yonder. There's some pretty strange stuff right under our feet, right under the water, under the ice, and Lake Vostok is one of the strangest places in the world. In a moment, we dive into some of the instances that Paul has dug into here on Coast to Coast AM. We're chatting with Paul Stonehill about some amazing work that he does on topics that just don't otherwise get covered here in the West, including the Lake Vostok, these mysteries. Paul produced a massive video that he puts on his YouTube channel. Paul, let's dig into Lake Vostok. First of all, describe where it is and what it is.
It's an ancient lake in Antarctica. and it's under Russian jurisdiction, so to say. It's a very unusual body of water that could contain materials that go back millions of years. It's under a very thick cover of ice. What's strange about this lake, you can look it up on the map. What I want to tell you, it's one of the least explored places on Earth. It's dark, deep, and mysterious. And it's in the central part of East Antarctica, near the South Pole. What's interesting about this is that the station itself, Station Vostok, was opened in 1957 by the Soviet Union. But the first part of the station was abandoned, and it's covered, and it's kind of secluded. There's a way to get there. It's not far from the second. The second one was opened in 1970s. The lake itself was discovered by a Soviet scientist who was and a pilot in 1960, if I'm not mistaken. However, he was flying over, and then he saw a strange object down below, and they started studying it. The actual drilling at the lake, from the information I was able to obtain, started in 1958, before it was discovered officially. So that's one of the secrets of the Russian Antarctica, so to say. And of course, the research was done not only by Russians, with the inclusion of the Americans and the French. They were digging and drilling as much as possible to get in, but in some instances, the work started due to incidents that took place down below, and we don't know what the incidents were. And the discoveries are amazing, but we don't know the full extent of the discoveries. You know, for example, I know that the last credible information I have goes back to 2018, and I follow up on scientific research, especially keeping my eyes on two young Russian scientists, Moskvitin and Yekaykin, and they bring in this information forward. Like Moskvitin told Russian television interviewers about UFOs that had been sighted over the station, and to them it's quite a usual event. So somebody is coming and visiting the lake from above. Now, the lake itself, the conditions that exist are not found in any body of the water on the planet. It's located under a layer of ice 3,770 meters thick. The water temperature at the surface is about -3, and the bottom layer, it's higher. And listen to this, because of geothermal sources. What they have down there is hydrothermal vents, just like in other parts of our planet, but not many people speak about it. Something is going down below. Microbial life was found, and some of it is very unusual, but no higher forms of life, according to scientists, American and Russian. However, they say that not all of the reports have been presented. Now, there is very high pressure down below in that lake, in the lake itself. There is bacteria that survive at a very, very high temperatures, and it's not something that exists somewhere. And there is darkness down below. It means that the life forms that receive energy get it as a result of the photosynthesis, and should not be there because there is no sun. So something very strange. A lot of oxygen is dissolved in the lake water, and in such concentrations, it is poison for all kinds of bacteria. But there is life down there, from what we know. There are no monsters, as I can say, but scientists repeat that there is no real organic life. So what life does exist there? Hydrothermal, tube worms, like in Mariana Trench, or maybe some kind of ancient robotic life, machines that have been left there long ago. You see, it's another enigma that you can't come too close to. We know that there have been drilling from, 1958, officially from 1970, It stopped in 1996, but then it resumed, and it was stopped again in 1998. And the Soviets said, well, it's because of the Westerners saying that we're not using the right equipment, and we can contaminate the water. But this is BS, because actually the Russian equipment being used nowadays, for example, is much better than the Western ones, and they admit it, because it doesn't contaminate the water. So what's going on? We don't know what's happening in 2019, but the latest was 2018. Nothing took place between the years of 2015 and 2016. Everything was stopped. Apparently, they're finding something down below that they're not reporting. Even the American scientist who was very much into the whole process kept saying that, you know, we're not showing everything that had been found because it has not been analyzed yet.
So are you saying, you said the U.S. and France have a presence down there as well. I don't know if that's current or that was before, but are they working together with the Russians, or is it these are separate facilities?
First of all, on the station, the French visitors very often, and the Americans are often. You cannot be a tourist from the outside and get to that. Nobody will let you in. And they say, well, it's because you can bring bacteria and other stuff that's not good for the environment. No, it's a territory that's not being open for civilian research, except for scientists. But, you know, they come from specialized institutes. Yeah, the Americans and the French were drilling together with the Soviets, with the Russians. I apologize. I think as late as 1996. Yeah, so, and for example, the Russians and the French at the Concordia station are friendly. They exchange information. They know what's going on. They come and visit each other.
So you said there the ice is 3,700 meters thick. How long has it been covered with that much ice? I mean, is it?
Okay, that's the interesting part. Because according to scientists, it could have been 15 million years. But there are maps of Antarctica, and I present it in my research as well, that go back to the 16th century. There was a Turkish map, Hagi Raj, I think, map. And it shows, and others, that shows Antarctica not covered with ice. And so we're not sure, but the scientists say, for sure, 15 million years. Well, according to their research, but how can it be if we know that from ancient sources that Antarctica was not covered with ice at one period? So what is being covered for us?
It seems like your guess is that some kind of piece of technology maybe has been found there.
My guess is, yeah, there is a technology, and it's very interesting. Because they keep saying, well, there is no real organic life there. They're not saying there is no other life. They're not saying there is anything else. But they knew. But we do know that they had incidents down below. What incidents during the drilling? The equipment they're using is great. I have it down to very minute engineering details. So what's going on? We're not sure. Again, the Americans, like I said, they're very much present in that. And what's interesting to me is this young Soviet scientist, Russian scientist Moskvitin, who actually lives in Latvia, so we could say he's Latvian, he mentioned not only UFOs, but he also mentioned, as a matter of fact, he says, yeah, there were Nazi German expeditions to the area, we know that, but they're not there anymore, of course. But even such knowledge is available nowadays. And they're being nonchalant about this. They said that, you know, life at the Antarctic stations, it could be boring once in a while. They have very poor internet, but it's livable. It's nothing, dangerous like in the sci-fi movies. But, you know, if you get lost in the snow, you may not come back. They mentioned that there was an incident at Lake Vostok when there was a fire, but they don't go into too many details. They said like diesel fire. Well, it reminds me of another incident aboard a Russian submarine where allegedly a fire started, you know.
Yeah. We can maybe touch on that. I'm wondering about the ownership of the land, what the legalities are, the claims of territory, because you said a Soviet guy flew over it, and the next thing you know, in 1957, there's a base there, a station, and the U.S., I mean, that's a long way from Russia. It's a long way from the U.S., too.
The story goes like this. After the discovery of Antarctica, that was in 1820, Russia did not do anything for 100 years. And Russia claims they discovered Antarctica, but, we won't go into that. But in 1950s, all of a sudden, definitely after the year of 1953 I described, mid-1950s, scientists all over the world they announced International Geophysical Year. And that's where the Soviets started paying attention to Antarctica, right? And initially, they were supposed to open a station at the point of the South Pole, but the Soviet delegation was late for the conference in Paris when the issue was being resolved. And the South Pole was already occupied, so to say, by the Americans. And that's where the Amundsen station is, if we have it right. So the Soviets took another station, Mirny Station, which was opened up in 56. And a year later, Lake Vostok Station was opened up and given to and the Soviets took it. So I am not United Nations. I don't know what's going on, how they're being given territories, and how they control everything. It's just interesting because well before I did some other research about Antarctica, and some of the territories in eastern Antarctica, and I found out that it was actually the Americans who discovered some of the territories down below, but they gave them to the Soviets in 1959. That was interesting. I was doing another research. We're not going into this today, but it had to do with a very sad UFO case when a Soviet aircraft, the only aircraft incident in Antarctica took place in 1979. And as I started, doing research, I found out, first of all, the Soviets have been present in Antarctica since at least 1946. There are reports that they actually, two submarines left Vladivostok, came to Antarctica, and they were attacked by a force. And there was a battle, and they came back damaged, but they did come back. I know that the Soviets were getting to Antarctica through Argentina in whaling vessels as a guise. And the next year, when they came in 1947, they met up with the Americans. We don't know all the details, but, it was very friendly. And ever since, we have this cooperation. But there's also something interesting. There is a cemetery, a graveyard at one of the Russian stations, now almost abandoned. Nobody knows who was buried there, but there are people who studied it, and they found out that military personnel who died in battle were buried in that station, and there was even a propeller at one of the graves. Who were they fighting against?
I've been looking at your site in the days leading up to the program, and you got some great photos that were included in your segment on Lake Vostok. Terrific stuff about the bleak environment out there, and whether or not there really is technology that they found, or even life, paranormal or whatever. It's pretty interesting research for a lake that's been covered with ice for maybe millions of years to be so pristine, and the idea that there are these geothermal vents down there, that presents all kinds of interesting possibilities for scientific research.
Those vents are very important. I think they were discovered by Ballard in 1977 when he went down below, but in the Pacific Rise area. But anyway, I always urge your listeners and everybody else, pay attention to Mariana Trench. That's where Russia and China and ubiquitous Japan, they are all going to that area, and that's where the hydrothermal black smokers, so-called black smokers, exist, and there is life that doesn't know sun. It comes from completely different source, and that's where the vents are. That's the tube, giant worms, and other strange organisms. This is where you will hear that noise. You can find it on the internet that's been recorded down below. And it's now no whales make a noise like that, whatever they tell you. There are deep ocean organisms, strange bacteria that basically gives energy of chemicals to synthesize carbon compounds and so forth. It's like science fiction movie. It's a life that doesn't know sun, and we don't know what life forms exist there. But back in 1963, when the French Batiscaf with an American Navy officers, when they went down, we know in the Soviet Union there was information that they actually sighted an object with multi-port holes or windows on it. And ever since, this has become a semi-secretive territory. For those that do not know, it's not far from American territory of Guam, okay? It used to be very fortified American military presence there. In 1982, at the height of Cold War, so-called Cold War, American Air Force started minimizing its presence there. All of a sudden, you know, it's incredible. Also, North Korea, when they were going to shoot at Guam, I was wondering if they know what's going on, if they have any understanding of the interest that China and Russia are paying to their territory.
You mentioned that the
United States, as it should. Back in the Soviet times, the Americans and the Soviets explored that area together, and there are very interesting reports about a lost platform that was actually lowered into the waters of Mariana Trench, and somebody sheared off cables. So there's a lot.
Well, you mentioned that in 1959, the U.S. handed over territory or the claims or rights to some land to the USSR. That seems to be an even stranger time in our history for us to be cooperating.
Something else I wanted to let you know, it's in 1985, the KGB listened on, it was by incident, they said, but they listened on communications of a Soviet scientific ship in the area of the Antarctica. And
I tell you what, Paul, hold on a second. That sounds like a really great story. Hold on a second, because we need to take another break. We'll come back and finish that story, and I want to get into Lake Baikal. That's the one where I think we've heard stories about creatures, as well as the Mariana Trench and Tunguska. We're talking with Paul Stonehill about his research into various mysteries from Russia and the Far East. And we go into the break with Johnny Nash, I Can See Clearly.